What if the most qualified candidates never actually win? In British politics, this isn't a hypothetical, it's a pattern. The figures who shaped modern Britain often did so from the sidelines, never claiming the ultimate prize of No. 10 Downing Street. From Rab Butler's transformative education reforms to Roy Jenkins' passionate Europeanism, these political giants possessed ministerial experience, intellectual depth, and policy achievements that outshone many who actually became prime minister. Tony Blair himself admitted this examination changed how he understood leadership. The cruel irony? The very qualities that made these politicians appear prime ministerial, principled positions, substantial accomplishments, authoritative presence, often became the obstacles preventing them from reaching the top. Understanding why requires us to look beyond resumes and into the messy human reality of political ambition, timing, and ruthlessness. Rab Butler embodied the archetypal best prime minister Britain never had. His credentials were impeccable. Architect of the revolutionary 1944 Education Act, modernizing chancellor, and a figure so central his approach earned its own label, Butscalism. He mastered the politically possible, negotiating compromises that brought Anglican schools into the state system while preserving autonomy, deals shaping British education into the 21st century. Yet Butler came agonizingly close to the premiership three times and failed each. When Churchill suffered an unreported stroke in 1953, Butler chaired cabinet as de facto leader. During the 1956 Suez Crisis, his nuanced position, privately skeptical while publicly loyal, satisfied neither hawks nor doves. Unlike rival Harold Macmillan, who shifted positions with political dexterity, Butler's complicated stance alienated conservative MPs. When Eden resigned in 1957, Butler even prepared a televised address, only to watch Macmillan prevail. Butler's story established a pattern haunting British politics. The most qualified candidate often lacks the ruthlessness required to seize power. His support for 1930s appeasement and inability to outmaneuver rivals prevented this brilliant reforming minister from reaching the top. Roy Jenkins was considered prime ministerial material in two different parties, first as a Labour cabinet minister in the 1960s, then as Social Democratic Party leader in the early 1980s. As chancellor after the 1967 devaluation crisis, he stabilized the economy through fiscal restraint. His prudent 1970 pre-election budget, refusing giveaways, may have cost Labour the election. Europe became his undoing. As a passionate pro-European, he led 69 Labour MPs to vote with Conservative Prime Minister Edward Heath for common market membership, while his own party opposed it, a pivotal moment that began Labour's schism and ended Jenkins' first leadership chance. Jenkins got a second chance, helping form the Social Democratic Party in 1981. After winning Glasgow Hillhead, polls showed the SDP-Liberal alliance exceeding 50% support. Yet electoral success required destroying Labour, which remained strong in its heartlands, an impossible task. Jenkins' unwavering European commitment placed him at odds with his party at crucial moments. His intellectual approach, while admired, lacked the ruthlessness to seize power. Principle can be a political liability when it prevents the flexibility needed to navigate shifting political winds. Michael Heseltine allegedly sketched his life plan at Oxford, millionaire by 25, MP by 35, minister by 45, prime minister by 55. Though he dismissed this as too cautious, he achieved most milestones, except the last. The contradiction defined him: grabbing the Commons mace, marching across Greenham Common in a flak jacket, storming out of Thatcher's cabinet, challenging her leadership. Unlike the Wets, who openly opposed Thatcher and were marginalized, Heseltine stayed close to power. As Environment Secretary, he convinced Thatcher, at the height of her monetarist fervor, to approve additional spending for Liverpool after the 1981 riots. When Chancellor Geoffrey Howe suggested managed decline for troubled areas, Heseltine launched a crusade for urban regeneration that actually succeeded. By November 1990, Heseltine possessed impressive credentials, clear beliefs fusing free markets with state intervention, compelling communication skills, and proven delivery. Yet colleagues persistently asked, "What's he up to?" even when his moves were innocent. This awkward combination made both Thatcher and Major suspicious. His leadership challenge brought down Thatcher, but didn't elevate him. Being perceived as too ambitious became a liability. Prime ministers are safer than they appear. Few reach number 10, but those who do typically survive longer than expected. Success requires ruthless focus that many talented figures lack. Butler pursued reforms without calculating their leadership impact. Barbara Castle implemented equal pay without focusing on becoming leader. Dennis Healey, despite formidable intellect, was absorbed in policy battles rather than leadership ambitions, unlike Gordon Brown, who combined both. Our subjects were trapped by their pasts. Healey couldn't escape his chancellor record. Butler was haunted by supporting appeasement, Jenkins by passionate Europeanism. Successful prime ministers, Blair, Brown, Thatcher, Major, Cameron, reached the top unburdened by controversial histories. Being an effective, courageous minister can actually prevent becoming prime minister. Being principled creates problems. Jenkins, Heseltine, and Clark were passionate pro-Europeans when their parties moved opposite directions. Prime ministers need flexibility. Wilson voted against joining the common market, then advocated membership. Blair conveyed Euro enthusiasm while loving the pound. Cameron removed conservatives from European groupings while telling them to stop banging on about Europe. The principled trio never became prime minister. The deepest explanation for these failures lies in the relationship between parties and their leaders. At crucial moments, many subjects clashed with their parties over urgent policies. The biggest factor blocking Butler, Jenkins, Healey, Heseltine, and Clark. Leadership requires both technocratic skills and ideological alignment with perfect timing. Successful leaders either sway their parties or adapt to them. Our subjects couldn't make this dance work. Being seen as a likely prime minister creates problems. Every move gets interpreted through ambition rather than policy merit. Neil Kinnock transformed Labour from 1983 to 1992, abandoning unilateral nuclear disarmament and making the party electable, yet lost two elections partly because media attacks portrayed him as unintelligent and unprime ministerial. He changed physically and psychologically, suppressing his natural exuberance to appear more prime ministerial, losing his sense of mission as a communicator. Early stardom generates suspicion among colleagues who resolve to block the path. These political lives reveal that power requires more than qualification. It demands perfect timing, ruthless ambition, and often compromised principles. Those who shaped modern Britain, establishing free secondary education, implementing equal pay, regenerating cities, stabilizing economies, often did so without claiming the ultimate prize. Leadership isn't always claimed by the most talented, but by those who navigate party dynamics, project the right image, and possess single-minded focus. These prime ministers we never had remind us that history is shaped not just by those who reach the pinnacle, but by those who fall just short, yet leave indelible marks on landscapes they never fully controlled. Their stories challenge us to reconsider what we value in leadership: competence and principle, or ruthless determination to seize power at any cost. The real lesson is that qualities making someone worthy of leading aren't always the same qualities enabling them to become leader, a paradox that continues shaping politics today.